Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome to a special series on the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. I'm Laurel Donnellan here with my dear friend and co-host, Daryl Brown. Join us as we dive deep into our personal journeys, sharing stories from different stages of our lives. In each episode, we'll interview one another about a chapter, starting with how we grew up and ending with where we are now. We will be discussing our history and the lessons that shaped our lives and approach to leadership.
You know, Laurel, we explored your childhood in great depth, but sometimes after we've spoken, there are some things that you may have wished you have said that you didn't go to, some places that you wish you had gone, but you didn't go to. Have you had any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. There's one story I'd like to tell that's really a joyful story that I think says a lot about me and who I am that I've thought about a lot since. Maybe I told this story. If I did, I forgive me, listeners. But when I was a senior in high school, I taught my entire high school how to disco dance. Did I tell that story?
I don't think so. I love it though.
So
I love it already.
It's really remarkable. I was very close to the principal, and I was the student council president. And I learned at a very young age that politics matter and relationships matter, because you can, if you have a vision and you have trust of someone with power, you can create your vision. So my friend Colleen O'Gara and I love disco dancing. And we actually, my friends and I went to Endicott, New York to learn. We found a disco dancing teacher and we took disco dancing lessons. And we wanted to teach everyone in the high school. By the way, to the record, Saturday Night Fever, the hustle. And so we took over the gym classes for an entire week, and we had every single person in the high school. I think it was like 600 kids. We taught them the hustle, and then we created a dance, and it was, we had so many people come, we had to create the dance in the parking lot of the high school. And then I got to see, as an observer, everyone in my high school do a dance that I taught them how to do with my friend Colleen.
So let's talk about leadership skills. Let's talk about the hatching of getting a group together and sharing your love for your fellow students and something that you just knew that they would enjoy, right? And then being able to stand back and see it unfold. I mean, what a picture that is in my head.
Yeah, I wish, you know, it was way before we had video cameras in our cell phones. So I wish I had, but I certainly have it in my mind and my heart. Well, a lot of things had to line up, right, for that to happen. I had to get buy-in from the vice principal who sold it to the principal. We had to get permission to take over the gym classes. Literally, the gym teachers left, and my friend and I had a little record player in the gymnasium, and we put on the record and taught everyone how to dance.
Is this the Saturday Night Fever?
Yeah.
So we're talking late 70s then.
Yeah, graduated in 1970, I think it was the spring of 1978. Right. And I had helped teachers along the way. I had, when I was younger, I had volunteered as a teacher's aide for little kids, but I didn't know that I could teach people something. But I did. Like, it was something I'd never done, but there was an innate knowing that this would go well. There was a lot of confidence. I don't remember any nervousness. I also, I had a great partner. My friend Colleen was like my partner in crime. We knew each other our whole lives, and she was the vice president of student council. I was the president of student council. We ran together. We had a really close relationship. Our birthdays were a day apart, so I had collaborative power going for me. I had confidence, and I think more than anything, it was just joyful. It was like a joyful endeavor.
If I'm the principal and vice principal, I would love to have something for a body of students that they could all connect with together. And that's what you brought to them. How much trust did they have in you, right? In order to do that, how much trust did the teachers have, the gym teachers have, to walk away from their classes and say, oh, these two young women have it under control, right? And how much trust did the student body have to go ahead with it and go through with it and listen to what you all had to say?
And we were a known entity. We ran for election. We were elected by the people. I won by 4 votes because I ran against a football player. So
Ooh.
I was happy for the win. So it just gave me experience of having a vision and being able to see it. It was sort of a flash mob before flash mobs
Right.
were a thing. So I thought a lot about that, as I just think it's a great story and it was a great memory. And the other thing I've thought a lot about is how childhood and the coming of age years are so important to who we are now. Who our parents are, how we're brought up, who our community is. The history that we go through. We talked about your history, and we've been through similar history. And who I am today really comes from that experience of my family. And there is, we talked about some hard things, but there was a lot of joyful things. My dad worked on the computers that went to the moon. And the moon landing was like another really happy memory. And it's like my dad worked on the computers that went to the moon.
Wow.
Still brings me a lot of pride in him. And he taught me about vision because when he was younger, he used to read comic books about spaceships before spaceships were invented.
So somehow
And
he knew
he
that he
kind of
wanted to be
knew.
a part of that, right? That he could contribute to that.
There were airplanes, but there weren't things that went beyond where airplanes went. But, through his comic books and imagination, it's sort of like he created his destiny. So, and I just think a lot about how I am as a leader, how I am as a person is just informed by who I was when I was very young.
Those years are foundational, and they're kind of they are the launching pad, right? So it sounds like you had a very sound one coming out of high school and then going on to college.
So I think it's a good story I told about I was kind of a big fish in my high school. And then I went to Cornell University for my little town, which was only 40 miles away, but it was like changing planets because I became a little tiny fish in a giant pond.
So let's talk about faith and let's talk about trust again. How did you know that that was the place for you?
Well, when I was 14, I think I talked about this in the last episode, I visited Cornell, but more than that, Ithaca was like my mom's favorite place. So I was often in Ithaca. I was often on campus growing up. Cornell became part of my childhood and part of my destiny. So I really decided I was going to go there when I was 14. And I was very intrigued by the hotel school and hotel management. And I applied and fortunately got in and went to Cornell for 4 years, which was, I think about this. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have connection to a global, we had like news for half an hour a day, Walter Cronkite. Cornell for me was like, my community was very local, was upstate New York, and then I went to a global community, right? So there was students from all over the world. There was students from all over the country. I was one of many smart kids. I wasn't, a part of a small group of smart kids. It was very competitive, and it was wonderful and difficult.
So, in that kind of a situation, when you find yourself the small fish in a big pond, let's go back to your leadership skills, and how do you stand out in situations like that? When you find yourself in situations like that, like there are a lot of smart people at Cornell. It wouldn't be Cornell if it wasn't, right? So all of a sudden, you could get intimidated and fall back into the crowd and kind of get lost. That could happen and probably did happen to a lot of very smart, outgoing people. How did you step up and step out?
Well, I was intimidated and I was scared a lot. How I found my way at Cornell was through cooking and hospitality. So I was in this school that had a kitchen and three restaurants and a meat lab. And I love food and I was interested in food. And so I sort of made a name for myself by being one of the best chefs. Even though it wasn't really a cooking school, we had opportunities to cook. And I did a lot of cooking. And I look back now and I was fearless when it came to cooking. Like I would look at re like I was hired for a French restaurant. So the students took over all the restaurants on the weekends and the staff went home. And my friend Zach Neumeyer hired me to be the pastry chef for his French restaurant on Saturday nights. I had never baked professionally. I had never worked with a professional equipment. And I made French bread baguettes from scratch. I made baked Alaska from scratch. And it wasn't the days where you could Google best recipe for French bread. I went into the library and pored over books and found the best recipes and then had to multiply them by 100. So Cornell, the hotel school gave me a lot of latitude for making mistakes and being creative. And I was kind of known for understanding food and beverage hospitality. My friends Susanna and Elliot and I also took over the restaurants on Sundays, and we created the most fabulous Sunday brunch. We used to serve up to 400 people a la carte Sunday brunch. Eggs Benedict. I used to make hollandaise sauce for 400 people. I don't even know how I did it. Like I think about it now. It was courage. Like I really had a lot of courage.
Courage and confidence, right? And there's a certain amount of, when I say confidence, sometimes confidence is about, when you have confidence in yourself, you just go ahead and do it. You don't get paralyzed by fear. right? You don't, it's not that you don't have fear, right? But
Yeah.
you're not paralyzed by it. And when it, I love the story about the French baguettes, right? And how you went in and researched about, and I've been in the kitchen with you. And you know, I see you and you say, oh no, well, if you don't have this, you can use this and do this and do, and I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I'm like stumped, but I see how you maneuver in the kitchen. And
Yeah. It's really my sport. It's really my thing.
good for you.
Yeah, it's fun. And I also think it's good when you're young to be naive, because like at this age, looking back, I'm like flabbergasted. Like, how did I know how to do that? You know? Like, and it was just believe it was pa also passion for good food and hospitality, which it came from my family. You know, my I always say my father's Irish, my mother's Italian, so food and beverage was always our spiritual path, you know, with hospitality. So anyway, there was a lot of passion, and I was with other people that were just as passionate about hospitality and food and beverage. So that was fun.
So this idea of serving hundreds of people seems to have carried over from high school to college, and them having faith in you that you would lead them down the right path.
Yeah.
That's what I feel.
Yeah, it's
Right?
true. Yeah.
I
And
think
I.
you nailed it when you talked about having passion, right? People have trust in those who are passionate about what they're doing.
I was very passionate about John Travolta and disco dancing in high school. And I continue to be very passionate about food and beverage and hospitality. It's a lifelong love.
So you weren't always in the French restaurant. What else would you say were memories of your college years?
You know, some of the most important classes I took were outside of the hotel school that really impacted me. I remember American history being really fascinating. I didn't like it so much in high school, but I really loved American history in college.
And
And,
how
you know,
does that relate to your foundational? How did,
well, it connects to my family being very political. I mean, we're all political animals, and I would say we're all patriots and understanding the history, and being proud of the history of my country. Was very good, and I think I wasn't really ready for it in high school, and I was more ready for it in college. I think I also had a really good professor, which makes all the difference. Like, he made it really like a show. I felt like I wasn't going to class, I was going to the American history show. Like, one of my favorite shows now is Finding Your Roots. I just love that show so much. I learned so much. So
Professor Gates
yeah.
is very passionate about what he does.
Oh my God. I would love to go on the show. Like, all right, I think we need to do it for ourselves and figure out how to what he does, but he's got a team of like 1,000 people looking at all your DNA and everything. Art history was a very, you know, we didn't really have a lot of art in Owego, New York. My mother used to take us to art museums in New York, but I think it was history of modern art was very important. I think the he I think remember taking a class called The History of Human Sexuality that was very interesting. So I went to Cornell with this sort of narrow focus of hospitality management, food and beverage, particularly within hospitality. And I think that it's interesting as I look back, like the classes I really remember most were things that broadened my, you know, view of the world.
How about strong relationships from college? Tell me
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit
I
about
have lots of people. Someone I talk to almost every week is still a close friend. So I have lots of people that I hung out with. I had great relationships in college. It's fun because one of my best friends in college, his daughter is working for me now. And it's so much fun to kind of see her, you know, after knowing her dad and her mom. And she's also very focused on, she's about to get married in France. And last week she showed me the pictures of her menu, and she's very focused on hospitality. So that's Storm Nyland. So, and one of my best friends, is one of our biggest clients. So, you know, people I met when I was 18, there's a handful that I'm still very close to, and that's super fun. We used to have a group of people called Hotel Colorado. And my friend Joe, was sort of the leader of us, and we would create these fantastic parties. Like every semester, we'd have a Hotel Colorado party. And part of the party was Joe driving his little red truck to Colorado and getting Coors beer, because we at the time there wasn't Coors beer in New York, so he went all the way to he went to see his family too, but he would bring back Coors beer so we could pretend we were in Colorado. And then that's how I got connected to Colorado and skiing, and my next chapter outside of school was very connected to Colorado.
So we talked a little bit about foundational relationships and foundational professors, as well as subject matter. But those college years, 18 to 22, are also, it's like when we start to flower, right? As it's when we start to realize who we kind of want to be, right? In high school, we flitter about and eventually land someplace, but we don't really know who we want to be. And there are different things that happen 18 to 22 that kind of propel us in ways that we didn't really know until we look back on it. So as you look back, have we missed anything that gave you that nudge in any given direction?
Well, as I look back on, I mean, hospitality was my focus, and I felt like I did that really well. Cornell just gave me, in the end, even though it was kind of tough as a small town girl to get used to the big town city folks that I went to school with, and feel like a part of. I think it gave me confidence because it let, I mean, the hotel school let me try out a lot of stuff related to leadership. I do have this memory of a wonderful professor, Francis Herman, who's no longer with us. I always thought I was a good speaker, and I had some experience speaking and doing speeches in high school, but I never really did a lot of it in college. And I think I took public speaking second semester senior year, and Francis Herman, who was like a really amazing communications professor. I don't remember what I did in her class, but I'll never forget she said to me, "You know, Laurel, you have a lot of talent. I wish I got to you before you had senioritis." So I think about that a lot, about how sometimes we have talent and we have a teacher that can bring it out in us, or a coach, and but we have to have the right attitude. We have to be open to learning. We have to be willing to be committed. And I think in her class, I was lazy. I wasn't, even though she was a great teacher, I wasn't motivated to bring her my best. And honestly, I think it in some ways it had to do with my drinking because by senior year in college, I really had a drinking problem.
And what gave you that? What were some of the signs?
I got depressed. I mean, I remember my friend calling me and saying, "Laurel, are you ever going to come to class? I'm worried about you." I think I was just coasting and I was putting partying before grades, and school. And I graduated, but if you look at my grades in college, like they started really high and they ended really low. So I graduated, but I mean, I really am fortunate that I had a chance later on in life to go back to school and do really well in graduate school because academically, I didn't necessarily take advantage of all the great things Cornell had to offer.
Well, we all need what we need, right?
Yeah.
In order to realize the direction that we're supposed to go in, right? So what was the turnaround for you? I mean, it sounds like you had a good friend who said, "Hey, check yourself."
Yeah, I had a lot of good friends. I tended to spend more time with the ones that also had drinking problems or drinking, to excess. I didn't really believe I had a problem that needed to be checked until 10 years after I graduated from college. So I got through my 20s. And pretty successfully by managing my drinking. It was just, I figured out how to perform at work and drink. And I did pretty well professionally. I think I could have done much better if I was, found the gift of sobriety earlier in my life, but I didn't find it until I was about 31. So, and I was also in the hospitality world. So I was working in food and beverage, wine tasting and buying was part of my job.
So, of course, partaking was, and we all know that, especially those of higher intelligence, we can fool ourselves into thinking that everything is, we can fool ourselves. I say fool ourselves. Rationalization. We could rationalize anything, right? And to some, to some degree, it protects us, right? And it sounds like you were successful, in spite of, right? So, who knows what would have happened? I mean,
I mean, it's just, and it's a pretty good story, my 20s and, what I did professionally. But yeah, it, who knows? Who knows what I could have done if I wasn't staying up until 2 in the morning and working, often.
You mentioned depression. Talk a little bit about that.
I think I first experienced depression. Probably in high school a little bit, but I, wasn't a time, and my family wasn't the type to send me to therapy. It was pretty much, oh, don't feel that way. You should be happy. I didn't even have words. I didn't have the word depression in my vocabulary, So my reaction to being sad was just get busier and get more done. And I got a ton done in junior high and high school. And then in college, I had friends that told me they were concerned about me at times. And, I had a friend who said, "You know, Laurel, you can be very, very low or very, very high, but I've never really seen you be in between." And then I think, I just, in my 20s, I managed my depression and anxiety with alcohol and work and sports. I was a did a lot of skiing in my 20s. Did a lot of working out in my 20s. So I did a lot of everything. I did a lot of work. I did a lot of working out. I did a lot of partying. And then in my early 30s, I started going to therapy, and I had new ways of coping with anxiety and depression. And that started my journey. Started with therapy, then I went into 12-step programs, got sober, and that's been a almost 33-year journey. And my sobriety story really coincides with my entrepreneur story, because even though I love my hospitality career, I always wanted to figure out how to do my own thing, like create my own something. And I didn't really have the courage to do that or the faith to do that until I got sober.
So I'm feeling a pivot here.
The pivot, I mean, my last hospitality job, like as far as hospitality operations, which is very hard physically, emotionally, long hours. I worked at some really cool places. I worked at the Brown Palace in Denver, the Hotel Sun in Alpen Vale, the Hotel Jerome in Aspen. I was continually being promoted. It was very glamorous and fabulous. But behind the scenes, you're working 12-hour days and dealing with a lot of very demanding customers that aren't always nice. And physically, if your waiter doesn't show up, you're carrying trays. And so there was a lot of mental and physical wearing out in my 20s. So my pivot happened when I was the food and beverage director at the Hotel Jerome in Aspen. The owner came in, fired the general manager, came in and said to me, "I think you're great, Laurel, but I'm replacing you with my nephew because I want to help out my family." And in the moment, I just felt great. I was like, I wasn't, I mean, I was basically being fired, but I didn't feel bad about it. I was like, this could be an opening to something new. And moved to New York City and got my first job that really was more about my intellect than it was about my back and my creativity. I became a consultant for a hospitality accounting and consulting firm. And I did that for a year. And then my last hospitality job was as a VP of human resources for a very progressive, interesting company in New York called Medallion Hotels. And I worked for some very cool people. And I got sober while I was there. So it was very, very, it was also a pivot, a big pivot in my life. I was an executive. I was flying around the world. I had a lot of frequent flyer miles. I had a lot of impact. It was super fun. Traveled half the time, so physically it was a little hard on me, but it was a great way to go out from hospitality into something new.
So when you're in lofty positions and you're used to being kind of the center of attention, that can be it's a great feeling, but it could be seductive in ways that aren't so good. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think I can definitely be a workaholic, and so I was always working. I was seduced by the power and the prestige and the travel, and it was just another opportunity to do a lot. Like I was always reading, I was always working, I was always pushing. I did that for 7 years. Fortunately, I worked for really sane, calm, older leaders. And they, one thing that helped me while I was there was we all had 6 weeks off of vacation and we all had comp time if we traveled. So if I traveled, I could take a, if I traveled on a weekend, I could take a Monday off. And this was mainly, I think, developed to accommodate my leaders who were older than me. I was, and I benefited from that.
So it sounds like when you were making that second pivot and were an executive at Medallion, you had leaders who obviously you enjoyed working for them. What did you get from them that
Oh,
was also foundational to who
got
you
so
are
much.
today?
So our owner at Medallion Hotels, his name is Chuck Feeney. He passed away last year or the year before. He was remarkable. I mean, he was really a pioneer in social impact, entrepreneurship. So everything we did and every dollar we made, went into things like building hospitals in Vietnam or sending poor kids to college. And we were aware of that. Like he started the giving while living movement that inspired Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. And he was all about community, global community service and giving back. So working for him, and he was also super fun. Like he wanted a hotel in Ireland. Ireland was very near and dear to his heart. So he built a hotel in Limerick, Ireland, and he had multiple companies. He started duty free shopping, but he had many companies along the way. He invited every leader of all his companies to the opening of his hotel in Limerick and had like several planes filled with people and brought us all there, and some of us stayed on, and he took us to his castle. He owned part of Ashford Castle. It was just very generous and fun. So he was amazing. And Fred Eyt was my CEO of Medallion Hotels, and he wanted to create, he was very much a pioneer as well. He wanted to create a hospitality company where his people, the employees, as we used to call them, team members, then we called them associates, would be really at the center of everything we did. And it makes perfect sense, but it's not always practiced where, he's like, if we treat people well that work for us, they'll treat our clients well. So we created like an internal university for the entire company. We weren't growing very fast, but he was really into promoting people and then helping them find other jobs outside of the company. He was very, very cool, very wonderful.
So two takeaways that you got from those two individuals that were part of your foundational upbringing.
Well, I think from Chuck, business can also be philanthropy. It doesn't have to be pure capitalism. You can blend, you can have a triple bottom line. You could take care of your people. You can take care of the planet, and you could take care of profit as well. He was really he was always ahead of his curve. And from Fred, he was a very spiritual man and understood that not everyone was Christian, but he wanted He wanted a thread of spirituality involved in what we did in developing our folks. And so personal enrichment was part of what we did at Medallion.
So let's go back a bit. Now I'm going to ask you to go way back. How do those things connect with your family background?
Well, my father's very much a self-made man. He came up very poor, and Chuck Feeney was that as well. And philanthropy and giving back. And my dad's, went to St. Ignatius, a Jesuit high school. But giving back and helping people that are less fortunate is kind of in their DNA, and they're from the same generation. Self-made, grew up poor. And had a really wonderful career. And spirituality has always been a curiosity of mine. Like, I was brought up Catholic. My mother was more of a hippie, like, she was more progressive. I think my grandmother was like a flower child. Like, she was like even more ahead of her time. So spiritual ideas and spiritual stuff was always interesting to me. And it's funny because years after Cornell, I think I was on a I don't know, but somebody reached out. I think I wrote something or something, like someone I hadn't been in touch with for years, 20 years after Cornell, said, Laurel, I'm really interested in what you're writing about related to spirituality. He goes, you've always been spiritual. I was like, I was spiritual at Cornell. I don't remember being spiritual at Cornell. He says, oh yeah, you were so spiritual. I was like, wow, that's interesting. So I think that's been a thread and a curiosity and passion as well.
So now I'd like to go back to your professor who wished she had gotten you a little bit earlier in your college years. How do you think you did by her?
I think I she's looking down at me. She's proud. I think I understand that I have a talent for speaking, and every time like last week, I ran an executive retreat for 16 people for 4 hours, and it's so fun now to have some mastery doing that teaching and facilitating and being aware of what a privilege it is and that I have talent for it. And it's taken me a long time to get masterful, and I could still get so much better, but how lucky am I that I had that talent and that she recognized it, and I've been working on it.
Well, I think that might be where the spirit, comes from, because if you're passionate about something, right, it just moves you. And that's where, that to me is always the foundation of spirituality, right? You're moved because you've found the passion inside of you, right? And it's not hard to do, right? It comes easy, right? You talked earlier about the highs and the lows. When you're in that neutral place, right? When you're in that neutral place, you can really understand how to get to the next level, because that's where spirituality comes in, right? And that's where faith comes in, right? And I love your story because it talks about that confidence, that inner strength that kept pushing you forward and putting you out there. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks for being such a great interviewer and listener.
Well, you had a lot to do with that. Is there anything that you want to say about those college years and beginning the beginning of your work life, right? That you haven't said yet.
For our listeners that may be starting out careers or working on their leadership, I would say learn to listen to your heart and do things that scare you.
I like that. Don't be afraid of fear.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success, one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at compassionateleaderscircle.com.